Morning, folks. So look, the key word for the conference and this session is metamorphosis. So I thought the way in which I'll try and structure my talk is kick off by presenting some results from a study that was completed a couple of years ago, and I'll just run through that fairly quickly to set the scene. Then I'll segue into some kind of breaking news, some research that's been happening very recently in Australia, and then towards the end of my presentation I'm actually going to talk about some results that are not to do with vineyards at all, but I'll bring them in there just to illustrate the potential utility for vineyard research of methods that we're developing in other crop systems. So just to give you a little bit of background, in Australia, one of our key pests is the light brown apple moth, the tortricid, and a really important natural enemy for this is an endemic Trichogramma species, T. carveri. And the video click isn't working there, never mind. Now the catch with using this parasitoid is that the adult longevity can be as short as 2 days unless the parasitoid is able to feed on plant nectar. And as you can see from this photograph here, as in other parts of the world, the vineyard is often kept in a very clean and neat and tidy sort of state, which might look kind of nice, but is not a great place for parasitoids to go about their living. Now you can see in this graphic here just how short the longevity of these wasps is when they've got access only to water, and it's this left hand curve here which drops off very quickly, such that by about day 3 we've got zero survival of the adults. Now just contrast that with the survival here, which is when the parasitoids have got access to the plant Alyssum or Lobularia maritima, a dramatic difference. And that is reflected also in the fecundity of these parasitoids, and you can see that again once they've got access to Alyssum, here we are, not only are they producing many, many more eggs in the first few days of life, but of course as they're surviving longer then they're still producing eggs 10 days after eclosion, whereas in other treatments they've all died quite some time ago. And the neat thing about this particular study is that we found that not only is plant species important, but indeed the cultivar within species is critical. And I don't really have time to go into great depth into these results, but they are in the literature if you want to chase them up. Essentially what's happening here is that Alyssum plants with white flowers gave far greater survival of the parasitoid adults, that's this top line, than did the Alyssum cultivars with coloured flowers. So colour really matters. Just to skip through this really quickly, we used HPLC to confirm that these differences weren't due to the sugar profile of nectar in different cultivars, and that was confirmed in tests where we dyed the petals of white Alyssum different colours by immersing the roots in food dye, and that treatment rendered the white flowering cultivar virtually as unattractive and useless as a naturally dark coloured cultivar. So colour indeed is a really important factor for the parasitoids, and that has clear implications for conservation biocontrol, whereby you've not only got to get the species right, but indeed the cultivar within species. Just to round off this section of the story, those that know my work know that I'm a bit paranoid about selectivity, that is finding plants that would be beneficial to biocontrol agents but not give a benefit to the pest. So in terms of the feeding by adult light brown apple moth, the pest species, we showed quite conclusively that they didn't derive benefit from allicin plants. That's kind of a pretty much standard method. But what we also did here was look at the benefit to the larvae of the pest of the foliage of our potential plants. And we're able to show that the allicin plants, the ones that we're hoping to use in biocontrol enhancement, did indeed give us very, very poor performance of the pest caterpillars. So a very highly selective food plant. And just quickly to give you some conclusions for that part of the study, it was only white allicin that gave large and consistent benefits to our parasitoid, and allicin was selective against the adults and the larvae of our pest. And so allicin is a selective food plant for ecological engineering in vineyards. And field experiments showed that led to increased levels of pest parasitism and also increases in predation. So that was just a really brief kind of recap of some work that's a few years old, and I want to go on to talk about stuff that's much, much more up to date. Now, you'll know from previous speakers that plants, when attacked by a herbivore, release things called herbivore-induced plant volatiles, HIPVs, and these are used as cues by natural enemies to locate plants where they're most likely to find prey or host insects. And it's been known for a little while that you can trigger HIPV production by the application of a synthetic compound, such as you see here, jasmonic acid. When applied to rice plants, then this leads to attraction of a parasitoid, anagrus, and that in turn leads to enhanced levels of parasitism of the key pest, the rice brown plant hopper. Just real quickly, the top graphic here is greenhouse, and that's the control. That's a low dose of jasmonic acid, I should say. That's the higher dose, and you can see here enhanced levels of parasitism. And out in the field, even the lower dose was giving a significant response. Still higher there with the higher dose. So you can kind of trick the plants into producing an endogenous blend of volatiles that are active in a biocontrol sense. So in Australian work, we've been collaborating with Steve Ratton from New Zealand and David James from Washington State, and we've tested a whole swag of different HIPVs, those listed at the top there, and they've been applied to grapevines in a spray with a type of adjuvant called Sinitrol. And in that experiment you can see being sprayed here, we had 15 metres between the treated vines. And we were monitoring insect densities either with non-attractive transparent sticky traps here or pitfall traps. And I just, because time is limited of course, I'll show you results just for the sticky traps. Perhaps you won't be surprised to learn that of all the taxa of natural enemies that we attracted, it was the Hymenoptera, parasitic Hymenoptera, that were most numerous, and so it's for such groups that were able to present statistically analysed data. For Mimerids, important parasitoids of course, on day 4 we're getting a significant treatment effect for hexanil acetate, the red line, and methyl anthranilate, the green line, compared with our water control in blue. A broadly similar trend for the selenides, whereby it's methyl salicylate, the red line here, and the green line, methyl salicylate at the lower dose, and that was benzaldehyde, the pale green line, and the darker green line is the methyl salicylate at the 1% dose. But again, the kind of key thing to notice here is it's on day 4 that we're picking up these treatment effects. They're not tending to really kick in very early. And for Trichogramma, we have a wider range of HIPVs that appear to be active. But the kind of overall trend I want to try and point out here is that we're not getting a very strong response in day 1. It's tending to be pretty strong day 4, but then tailing off over time. So what's going on with that? Well, several parasitoid families are clearly responding to quite a few different HIPVs, but the responses were not immediate, and so we think that the synthetic HIPVs that are being applied here are signalling the plants to produce an endogenous blend of volatiles rather than the natural enemies being attracted directly to those compounds that we're spraying on. So responses generally declined within a week, and there are two fixes to that problem from a pest management perspective. A technological kind of fix would be dispenser technology, perhaps microencapsulation, but I would favour an ecological solution whereby food plants might be used to provide shelter and food to those natural enemies that we're attracting, and thereby get those benefits of enhanced natural enemy numbers persisting for longer. So how would that work? Steve Ratten coined the term attract and reward. So of course we'd be applying an HIPV to a plant. That would lead to an endogenous blend of HIPVs being produced by the plant, natural enemies attracted, and because we've got food plants, such as our nice selective allicum growing down here, that means that the parasitoids and other sorts of natural enemies can get floral rewards and be retained within the vineyard system for longer. So far, so good. Metamorphosis, okay, where to next, all right? As time permits, I'm going to talk about two directions that we are intending to take this work. First of all, silicon. Silicon-based fertilizers are really interesting. And if you talk to a plant pathologist, you'll know that they're widely recognized as compounds that are involved in plants' induced defense mechanisms against fungi. And so we're doing research now to explore the extent to which that extends out into arthropod challenges to plants. And we've got two new PhD students starting next year who'll be working on this aspect in vineyards. The second way in which I think vineyard pest management might metamorphose is by greater use of landscape scale studies of natural enemy movement, and in a moment I'll just briefly show you some results from cotton which illustrate, I think, the power of such approaches. But first of all, just a quick glimpse about silicon work. So we've been using potassium silicate as a fertilizer on cucumber plants, and you can perhaps make out these little tents here which allow us to have differently treated plants growing in the same greenhouse without crosstalk. Each of those tents is separately vented to the outside. And then various sorts of bioassays were conducted, and the one that I'll give you a brief glimpse at today is with the predatory beetle, Hippodamia variegata, and the aphid Mysis persici. And we had four treatments in this experiment, either a silicon-treated plant with the pest, a silicon-treated plant without the pest, and of course the opposite here, silicon minus plants with and without the pest. So the null hypothesis would be that the beetles, when released into this experiment, would settle in a random pattern and there'd be no differences between the treatments. But as you can see here, consistent with the hypothesis that silicon application to the plants enables those that are challenged by a pest to mount a stronger induced response, we did indeed find that a larger proportion of our natural enemies settled on those plants. Okay, switching across to the kind of the other extreme now, from small laboratory bioassays to really large-scale fieldwork. Here's where I kind of run out of vineyard stories, and I'm going to start talking about cotton briefly, but I think there's great utility for such approaches. So in a cotton field, they can be quite barren places, although sometimes there's useful riparian vegetation nearby, and we're able to show by application of rubidium chloride to such remnant vegetation that natural enemies such as spiders will take up the rubidium rare earth label. and that allows you then to sample insects from the cotton crop itself, and the insects are then assayed with an atomic absorption spectrophotometer, which allows you to determine which of the individual natural enemies originated from our sprayed area. Furthermore, there might be natural enemies. The take home for that rubidium story is that we're able to show that lots of natural enemies, including ladybirds and predatory beetles and spiders, that were caught within the cotton crop originated from nearby shelter belts, and they were moving, depending on taxon, at least 300 metres from the source. But what about the still greater scale? Now here we've been using GIS approaches to analyse a cotton-growing valley. This is approximately 1,000 square kilometres, and those little red dots that you might be able to make out are individual cotton fields that were sampled. And then we're able to digitise these aerial photographs and ground truth them, and then analyse for each of our cotton fields the composition of the landscape at various spatial scales you see here with these successive circles. Okay, so that red spot here is our sampling position in a cotton field, and here you can see the radii at greater distances, this greatest one being 3 kilometres radius. Then we used general linear models to look at the response of the cotton crop fauna to the composition of the landscape at different spatial scales. Okay, 118, 750, 1500 and 3000 metres in radius. And just to give you one example from a very, very rich data set, we found that for lynx spiders, the aspect of landscape composition that most strongly drove their densities within cotton crops was the proportion of perennial woody vegetation at that largest spatial scale. Quite a surprising finding. Now, if Teo Chartka was in the audience, he might be kind of drumming his fingers and saying ho-hum, you know, that's not very surprising, because his group has pioneered such work and shown quite conclusively in a number of different landscapes that natural enemies in crops do respond to landscape composition at quite a large spatial scale. But the thing that I'm really excited about in the work that we've been doing over the past year or so in Australian cotton fields is getting to grips not so much with the composition of the landscape, but the levels of connectivity within the landscape. Okay, so just to help you get your head around that, these three hypothetical landscapes have all got a farm field in the centre there, and they've all got in the surrounding area the same amount of non-crop woody vegetation, but as you can make out, some of them are much more readily or well connected to the crop than others. And so we're able to use this sort of notion, and the way in which we've quantitatively analysed it is with an approach called cost distance analysis, which I don't think has been used before in pest management, but it's a fairly well-established method in conservation biology, especially for vertebrates, and looking at how they respond to landscapes. The way in which this works is that you can imagine a source habitat and a sink habitat on the right-hand side, and the sink habitat is the crop where we want our natural enemies to be ending up. And both the top row and the bottom row are the same Euclidean distance, of course. But if we've got this top row here where all of the landscape elements between source and sink have got a low cost of moving through their favourable sort of habitat, then the cost of making that journey is 6 on this arbitrary scale. But the same Euclidean distance, but where some of the landscape elements are much more hostile, perhaps a fallow field, for example, means that as an arthropod moves over the same distance, then the cost is much greater. Okay, so using that very basic concept and some quite sophisticated Is that 5 minutes? Yeah, perfect. Using that approach, we were able to analyse our cotton landscapes, and I'll just shoot through the next few quite quickly. You don't need to have a detailed understanding of what's going on here. We analysed the composition of the landscape in terms of its cost to natural enemies, one taxon at a time. And what ended up being spat out by the software was an estimate for each natural enemy taxon of just how expensive it was or costly it was for a natural enemy to move through different landscapes. Perhaps because time's a little bit tight, I'll just stay with our lynx spiders and ignore those other natural enemies for the time being. What this is showing here is that lynx spiders responded once again most strongly to that large spatial scale, the 3,000 kilometer radius, but at that scale the relative cost of T for trees, G for grassland or C for cropland was as shown by these ratios here. In other words, grasslands were 10 times more costly to move through than was tree habitat, woody vegetation. And cropland, if I can wake this cursor up, was 50 times more expensive for natural enemies to move through. And the really neat thing about this, I think, is that for herbivores, we're able to derive similar ratios. And we'll just look at the jacids for the moment. Once again, trees, grassland and crops. And what you'll notice here is that those agricultural land uses were less expensive than were trees. So kind of the inverse response to that exhibited by spiders and some natural enemies. So I think there's scope here to come back to that notion of selectivity that we spoke of earlier. Selectivity by appropriate choice of cultivar as a ground cover plant, and here perhaps there's scope for selectivity at the landscape level by manipulating the composition of different landscape elements like trees. Okay, don't panic, Rufus, it's my last slide now. Overall conclusions then, just to try and pull all this together. I think that biological control in vineyard systems, as in many other systems, is going to be increasingly important in future years as consumers are more and more fussy and selective about the types of produce they want. And if you think about it, wine is perhaps the most sophisticated agricultural product being sold to the most sophisticated audience. So I think they're going to really appreciate and demand produce from low risk, you know, safe production systems. So how are we going to meet that need? I think nectar plants are useful, but as I've said many times, selectivity is really important. HIPVs, I think, they've been known for a couple of decades by insect ecologists, but I think that those involved in the sharp end of pest management are just recently really embracing these, and I think in coming years they could be quite an important class of new plant protection products. Attract and reward, which is bringing together those notions of nectar plants and HIPVs, I think offers very significant promise. And maybe silicon can be part of that mix as well. Maybe applications of silicon fertilizer to vines and indeed other crops would help ramp up those plant defenses. And I think at landscape scales, there's scope to provide better sources for natural enemies in a selective fashion. So there's some new approaches there for vineyard pest management, and I think some quite interesting new ecology as well. Thanks for listening. We're saying one question. Make it a good one. Okay, the question was, what do I think is the mechanism for the action of silicon in such systems? And the little bit of work that's been done on that from the plant pathology angle suggests that it's tied up with the salicylic acid cycle or metabolic pathways. And so although it's yet to be looked at in terms of plants' defences against arthropods, that would be the hot lead.